Today, Michigan's election results finally became official. Late this afternoon, the Board of State Canvassers voted to certify. The voices of Michigan voters have handed Joe Biden an unambiguous victory. That's after a serious pressure campaign from President Trump to get Republican lawmakers and officials to hand him the state's electoral votes anyway, a move that would have been unthinkable in previous cycles. But Donald Trump has made the unthinkable reality in today's Republican Party.
You know, the escalator ride has become, you know, it's that famous moment where we all laughed. We all thought, no way, no way.
No way could Donald Trump become the head of the Republican Party, let alone the leader of the free world.
And here we are.
This is the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. That was Nick Vandeleau, a conservative who left the Republican Party in the era of Trump. We'll be back with him in just a minute. But before we do that, let's jump back in time 5 years. In 2015, a bankrupt real estate mogul, a 1980s playboy and reality television star, descends an escalator in his Manhattan high-rise to announce his candidacy for president of the United States.
I am officially running for president of the United States, and we are going to make our country great again.
His announcement is about crowd size and his sweaty competitors and stupid leaders and making deals for America.
I will be the greatest jobs president that God ever created. I tell you that.
For not just a few conservative voters, watching Donald Trump take over the GOP has been a lot to take. Many party devotees have embraced the populist vision Trump has laid out, even at the cost of traditional conservatism. For some, it's not that easy to ignore the shift in values. They're not going to become Democrats, but are they still Republicans? We turn to two guys we know as younger Republicans cut from the Ronald Reagan cloth. Matt Resch and Nick DeLue worked together at Resch Strategies, public relations firm in Lansing. And they've both worked on several Republican administrations and campaigns and causes over the years. You guys both came of age and were coming up in times when George W. Bush was talking to Republicans in different ways about compassionate conservatism. And there was just a whole lot of new energy in a lot of ways. In conservative circles. So then Donald Trump comes onto the scene. Did you take him seriously as a candidate, Matt?
I still don't, but no, I never did. at no point. And in those early weeks, you know, from the escalator ride to what was it? Was it Cinco de Mayo, where he had that taco bowl and said, you know, the Mexicans love me because I love this taco bowl. All of these, like week after week, there was another thing that I just said, oh, that disqualifies him. He's done. That's not going to happen. At some point, one of these people who's running is going to stop this. At no point did I think that he was viable until I guess the day after the election 4 years ago.
Yeah. How about you, Nick?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And I'm self-aware enough to understand that I missed something 4 years ago. No, I didn't take him seriously. It became pretty apparent pretty quickly, though, that we should during the primary process. Mm-hmm. He became he was a force of nature. I mean, he still is. But during the primary process was an absolute force of nature and was appealing to people in different ways than folks had tended to try to appeal to voters. Certainly some of that was policy oriented. There was a populism to him that wasn't common with the traditional sort of candidates. But, you know, most of it, I think, at least at the outset, was the personality and the approach that he took, the no holds barred, you know, dirty jokes during the debates, you know, the tough guy persona. Folks had never seen that before. It was a show and he generated a lot of attention. And I think I got it. I think, you know, Matt would probably tell you he got it too during the primaries, that he would be a force in that process. But then you get past that to the general and I went right back to dismissing him.
Yeah.
And thought, well, no way. You know, this is gonna be a Reagan-Mondale landslide.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I was wrong.
So 2017 rolls around. Did you have some hopes that Donald Trump might prove to be more presidential as he moved through his presidency?
I mean, I'll take that first. No, I guess I have had moments. I've had moments over each of the last 4 years where I had moments of hope. And those moments tended to come when he was scripted and reading from teleprompters, when he delivers remarks that are carefully crafted for him. And you can tell he hasn't written them. They don't sound anything like him. You think, well, if he could do this, maybe. But those moments are fleeting.
I agree with Nick. I had hopes at the very beginning. But the moments of hope that I would ever get would kind of come by accident, and they had nothing to do with him. I can think of a couple of times where I was driving to work and listening to an NPR interview, and I clearly remember one with Kay Bailey Hutchison, former senator from Texas. And I don't know what position she held with the administration, but she was talking about something, and it was articulate. It was well thought out. It was policy I agreed with. And I thought, who is this person? And then I realized, oh, she said who she was, and she's an appointee, and she's doing work on behalf of this administration. And I'm like, I bet the president has no clue what she's doing, what she's saying, what these people that have been hired around him are doing on a day-to-day basis. And that's where if there's been any hope, that's where I've gotten it, is that I know that aside from the clowns who surround him at the top, there are some down the line who I think know what they're doing and have some compass and have been doing good things over these 4 years, at least from a conservative government standpoint.
Do you feel at this point, as he continues to be someone who wants to have a role in the party and who is having an effect on state and regional party leaders, do you feel like the problem with Donald Trump in this moment is more practical in terms of the role that he might continue to exert on Republicans, or is it more spiritual or theoretical in terms of just what he represents in conservative thought?
What the president represents in conservative thought could fill a thimble. But I guess there are a couple issues to unpack there. The one is, you know, bringing out more voters and the problem with polling. He polled in 2020, what was it, 2.6 million voters. 2016, it was about 2.3. At the same time in 2016, he lost about 250,000 traditionally Republican voters to conservative third parties, folks like me, honestly. I mean, if we're being transparent here on the radio, who always vote Republican, but just couldn't do it. And most of those folks came home to him. With the way turnout was up so much this year, I mean, dramatically, you know, I'm not completely convinced at this point that he turned out a huge swath of brand new voters, that, you know, that there's been some great realignment over the last 4 years. So that's you know, one part of the question. The other is, you know, sort of the realignment of the conversation and the philosophy of the party and his role in it. I think the president's role right now in the party is going to continue to be outsized until January 20th and until he retires campaign debt. And then the jury's out. I don't know that we know yet what the next chapter is for Donald Trump and the Republican Party.
More of our conversation about the future of the GOP in Michigan when we return.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Where would you like to see the party go from here? Matt, do you want to start off?
You know, it's kind of a challenging question for me to think about an answer, because I've kind of stopped caring, to be honest, about the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. I think that the party system over the last number of years, and this is certainly some of the fault lays at the feet of Donald Trump, but I think it's just our narrative and just how nasty it's all gotten. It's become a sport. It's not about policy. It's not about ideas. It's about my team winning and your team losing. And it doesn't matter what you say or what you do. The other team is bad. Therefore, I'm not going to vote for you, or my team is good. And I don't care what they do or what they say. I will support them for whatever they do. You know, as a party, I would just like it to be something, again, that I could feel proud about being a part of. Nothing about this election on really either side was about a single idea. And I don't mean a single idea and not a big idea. I just mean there were no ideas. This wasn't about a policy. This campaign wasn't about policy. It was about a single person, whether or not you were motivated to support Donald Trump or whether or not you were motivated to hate Donald Trump and to try to vote him out. And I would like it to get back to the point where we're not about personalities, that the parties obviously, and we saw this with Obama. He was a personality. He ran because he inspired. He was less about the policies and less about what he wanted to do. And he was just an inspirational figure that inspired people to support him. And you see the same kind of cult of personality with Donald Trump. And I think for the health of the party, it's not sexy. And, you know, the hardcore political consultants are going to say this isn't going to win any elections. But it would be nice to go back to a time when there are common ideas that we all agreed on as a party that we could promote and feel proud of. And I don't think anybody, I would love to ask, you know, the percentage of the people who voted for Donald Trump to ask the question what the Republican Party stands for. Because I would guess that at this point, very few of them could say, we stand for him. That's what it would be.
I think the opportunity that the Republican Party has now, though, is a clean slate if they want one. Does the party choose now, you know, as it moves forward, does it take the look in the mirror and you know, figure out what went wrong, make those calculations, and then start fresh? Or it can look at those ideas and claim that it supports those ideas and backs those ideas. And, you know, who knows, April, does Donald Trump Jr. or Eric, or, you know, what does it do 4 years from now?
Could we just talk a little bit about whether this is a time to where some reformation of what both parties stand for? I mean, there are any number of progressives who are really upset with the moderate views of their party. And the assumption has always been that there were, you know, that there were Bernie Sanders voters and there were Joe Biden voters and never the twain shall meet. But some of that is now under discussion on the left. Do you think that there is that opportunity to talk about a reformatting of priorities on the right?
I would hope so. But my fear is that the people who are in a position to lead that conversation, for the most part, you know, I don't want to point fingers at the Michigan legislature, but, you know, we have a Speaker Wentworth right now in large part because of the motivation that Donald Trump led, you know, people to the polls to vote for Republicans at a time when we thought every lobbyist in Lansing thought the House was going to be democratically controlled. And my fear is that people who are in those positions don't think there's anything wrong, that this is not something that we need to change, or that we're doing the right things because we're winning. I don't want to say that I wish we hadn't won the House, because I think I'm grateful that we did, and I'm grateful that it looks like we'll hold the U.S. Senate. But at the same time, sometimes a disastrous loss is cleansing and makes you actually rethink things. And I think that I'm hoping that the lessons learned, we can go and look at how we do things better and how we do move on beyond this guy once he's gone.
Reformatting is an interesting way to frame the discussion. There are opportunities, I think, for the Republican Party, even not under a Donald Trump, to continue to expand its base into non-traditionally conservative places. And I think one of the blessings that's come from the Trump approach for Republicans could be the roadmap that he's sort of highlighted in a couple of key constituencies. One, we didn't see this in Detroit, but we saw nationally, the president performed in 2020 much better with minority voters than he did in 2016, and then Republicans had done for quite some time. Why was that? Well, let's figure that out. I think it's because he paid attention to some issues. I think some of those maybe personality. I don't know. We know completely, but let's figure it out. But I think he made inroads there. And does the party moving forward continue to embrace sort of a populism and making direct appeals to blue collar workers, to union members? If it does those things, maybe it continues to hold on to some of that vote.
I think everyone's fear at this point is that the effect of these 4 years is a hardening on both sides, that there might be retribution among Democrats in office, and that there might be more gridlock coming out of Congress. Nick, you mentioned that you consider yourself a single-issue voter, being pro-life, and I imagine that Amy Coney Barrett's joining the Supreme Court means that she gives your issues a fighting chance. Do you think that the movement came away with the feeling that the ends justify the means, or do you think that there is some reflection going on about the cost of a Trump presidency on other fronts?
Yes. I think that most, you know, if voters are single issue voters on the life issue, you know, for the pro-life community in particular, listen, they're going to back, we're going to back as a group pro-life candidates. And we're going to oppose as a group, candidates that aren't pro-life. I can tell you that, you know, the Supreme Court nominations that the president made, that really energized a lot of folks that couldn't hold their nose, in 2016. And they found the ability to do that in 2020. You've got to remember, on an issue like that in particular, you know, voters like me look at that as a matter of life and death. So that has a way of motivating, but the answer to your question was yes, on both ends. Not a single one of those voters liked the president's attitude, his approach, his handling of other issues, his personality. And they'd be the first folks to, you know, to criticize it. In the end, was it enough to keep them away? For some it was, but for many it wasn't.
I found myself thinking, as we were getting ready for this conversation, about Justin Amash, who's leaving Congress this year. And he left the Republican Party because he said he no longer recognized it or the people around him who were his peers in the House. I just wondered if you two feel like you still have some kind of place within the party, or if you could imagine your activism finding a home in different places. Matt, I think I know how you're going to answer this, but do you want to go first anyway?
I guess I would still say that if I had to pick, I'm a Republican, because I feel more at home in what I think the Republican Party is than I ever will probably with what the Democratic Party is. So that's not really probably going to be an option to me. I definitely feel as I get older, my attitude on a lot of issues moderates. I split my ticket more this time than I probably ever have before. I would be happy if I could come back to a point where I would be proud to say that I'm a Republican. And I think that hopefully when we get to a point where there's another leader, I mean, I could basically anybody would be someone who I could say is better. I wish Justin would have run for president. That would have been my answer.
Nick, how about you?
Yeah, I stopped referring to myself as a Republican 4 years ago. I just didn't feel particularly welcome or wanted, to be honest with you. That doesn't mean that my ideas or my beliefs or my sort of foundational principles have changed at all. In fact, they haven't. Do I still think of myself as I guess I describe myself as conservative, and I wouldn't anticipate my activism finding another home. You know, at the end of the day, we're going to have, you know, two choices on the ballot, on position after position. I'm not going to be voting for a lot of Democrats. I'm probably not splitting my ballot quite as much as Matt is.
There was a time when pro-life Democrats were a little bit more common in Congress, and there have certainly been Democrats from Michigan who identified that way. Do you think that do you foresee that time being over, that there is cross-party work?
On that issue in particular, I think that unfortunately that time's over. There have been pro-life Democrats in Michigan in the past. I've taken pride in voting for them in the past. In particular, I think it's important because I think it's important to have that representation, a diverse view, you know, diversity of thought in that party. It's something I valued and was willing to split my ticket there. that's something we've seen less and less in the state of Michigan, something we've seen less and less nationally outside of Louisiana. And I think that that's probably something we'll continue to see less and less of. You know, I mean, the ultimately your personalities are going to play a role, but we are dealing with a two-party system for the most part, and folks are going to find their home. You know, you mentioned April earlier, you know, are the Bernie Sanders Democrats going to be able to coexist with the Joe Biden Democrats? Well, it's a better choice for them than Donald Trump, right? So they found their way to where they had to find their way. I think we're all going to be in that position, with a few exceptions. If we get past the Trump era here, I think there will be fewer exceptions.
And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. Our episode was produced by executive producer Laura Weber Davis, with help from Jen Guerra and Mercedes Mejia. The Stateside theme is by 14KT, with additional music by Blue Dot. I'm April Baer. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.